It's not always easy to come up with a concept that is compelling, has a strong message, and can be made on low to no budget. It's a big challenge. One of the best ways to bring these elements together is to use one of the two secret weapons of fake doc filmmaking. These two weapons, as it turns out, are not only for fake doc filmmaking. However, they are ones that are utilized frequently and often to excellent and effective use. Those two secret weapons are satire and allegory. The interesting thing about satire and allegory is that they are flip sides of the same coin. Satire is when you take a typical circumstance and you make an exaggerated version of it in order to point out its flaws and its absurdities. Allegory is when you disguise a real-life situation as something else so that you can make observations about it without having to make the point so directly, allowing audiences to experience the emotional truth of a situation without the preconceived notions that come with knowing the true focus of the allegory. So both of them replace normal circumstances with something in order to make a larger point, and that's perfect for our needs. As I mentioned before, the two most frequently used genres in fake doc filmmaking are horror and comedy. It just so happens that those two genres each use one of the secret weapons very effectively. Though satire can be used effectively in other genres, comedy is actually its perfect home. The same is true of allegory, which is used frequently in everything from science fiction and fantasy to straightforward drama films. However, nowhere is it more effectively used than in the horror genre. Let's look at some already existing examples of both cases and then discuss how that helps you build your story and then create a couple of ideas that utilize them so we can see the process in action. Let's start with an example of satire with the horror comedy American Psycho. The film is based on the Bret Easton Ellis book, and when director Mary Harron and co-writer Guinevere Turner adapted it for the screen, they saw the story as an indictment of the self-centered, pleasure-seeking greed rampant in the decade of the story setting, 1980. But they wanted to make sure that there was no confusion about the point of the film. Many stories about high finance, even movies like Wall Street and Wolf of Wall Street, can subtly glamorize the exact thing that they're trying to critique. So they made sure their main character was an exaggerated version of that greed and bloodthirstiness, so there was no confusion. He was a serial killer, able to eat at fancy restaurants and rub elbows with other wealthy brokers at his job during the day. Then, at night, he abuses prostitutes, murders homeless people, and takes out his business competition with a fire axe. There's nothing he won't do for his own pleasure or to protect himself from being discovered. The character is an unrepentant monster, but he doesn't look all that different from everyone else around him, and that's the satire. Once the idea of Patrick Bateman being a serial killer becomes clear, then all the other story and character decisions become easier. Then it's just a matter of finding the absurd aspect of being a serial killer that matches the life of a greedy 1980s Wall Street creep. Finding that satirical element allowed them to more easily trace the direction of the story. Now let's move on to an example of allegory in the science fiction family film E.T. It's one of the most popular and beloved movies in modern cinema, but there's more going on in the story than just a boy and his alien. The film is a Jesus allegory, with E.T. standing in as the savior figure. With that knowledge in mind, think about the overall plot points. A mysterious being arrives on Earth from another world. This mysterious being has unusual abilities, including the power to heal. A villainous government group captured him and took him away from his friends and followers. The mysterious being died, but somehow, beyond possibility or explanation, he rose from the dead to live again. Got to see his friends once more before he had to return to where he came from. All of those beats are straight out of the Jesus story, but it was disguised allegorically as the story of a friendly alien with a glowing heart. Once the allegory was established, it was all that much easier to figure out the elements of the story. So let's try a couple of our own now. We'll start with satire, okay? Because I'm a horror writer, I will lean into horror comedy to discuss the satire, right? So I want to find a way to have a conversation about school shootings in a comedic sense. That sounds crazy, right? Why would you want to do that? Well, sometimes the only way to have an honest conversation is to have a conversation where you say shocking things, and hopefully those shocking things are funny enough that they can sink in without being only offensive, but also making some sort of an impact. And the thing I always think about when I think about school shootings is, how is it that we're so absurdly looking at all these things happening and never thinking to blame the thing that's actually causing it, right? You can't shoot people without a gun, and yet we find every other excuse in the world to have a conversation about other than the gun. And so I start to think, is there something that I can create an exaggerated version of that to point out the ridiculousness of that? So I start to think, okay, well, what else could be causing rampant deaths at a place? And we know what it is that's actually causing it, and yet we talk circles around it. And I thought, well, what about like a monster? Could there be a monster that's killing everyone? And, you know, everybody's pretending like there's some other issues that need to be dealt with instead of the monster. And then I go, okay, well, if I'm going to go for a monster, I have to have a monster that has some sort of mythology around him, right? So that we understand what the rules of the monster are, so that it's more humorous when we're not paying attention to what the rules are. And that's when I think of the werewolf, right? Because a werewolf transforms from a person into a werewolf quickly. There's usually a bloody aftermath. They disappear, right? That could equate pretty well to the idea of a school shooting too, where a person goes into a place, causes a mass amount of violence, and then vanishes. Everyone else has to look at the aftermath and figure it out, and then talk circles around how that's not really the thing that they're addressing. And so I came up with an idea for a satirical story about a host of a cable news show having guests on after the seventh werewolf attack in 3 months has just happened at a high school. And they have guests on, you know, one that's a conservative and one that's a liberal. And the conversations that they get into are the same things we talk about every time there's a werewolf attack, right? That we just need to have more hunters on campus. That's the thing that's going to help. And then when someone says, well, what about stopping the sale of wolfsbane from stores? Because that's what's turning people into werewolves. That's what's making them go crazy and kill people. And of course, the person who believes in total unfettered freedom believes that anybody in America should have the right to buy wolfsbane all they want. And saying otherwise means that you're accusing people of being irresponsible wolfbane users. And so there it is. There's our satire, right? Find a way to have a conversation about school shootings, but the conversation is actually about werewolf attacks because we've taken a much more extreme example of the thing that we're discussing to show the absurdity of the thing that we're actually discussing. So that's an example of satire. Let's move over to the idea of allegory, which is, again, flip side of the same coin. We want to have a conversation about something, but we don't want to have a direct conversation about it because we want the information to sink in more than we want people to think it's a hot-button topic about something political or social. So let's take something like sexual assault, right? If we wanted to tell a story about sexual assault, but we didn't want it to feel like an after-school special or something that was just being created to further an agenda. How do you disguise something as sexual assault? Well, there has to be a sexual assaulter and a sexual assaultee in a story like that. So we start to think, okay, you have your aggressor and you have your victim. How do you change that dynamic? Well, because my brain always goes to horror again, I think of a horror story. And there's a lot of different ways you could go. Can you use a slasher story? Certainly you could, although that one's much more on its surface. Unless you've got a supernatural slasher, it's much more straightforward. The first thing I think of, because it's often been related in terms of sexuality, is the vampire. So the vampire, someone that's feeding on someone intimately, taking something away from them in order for them to survive, right? The fact that there's an intimacy involved in the biting and the transferring of fluids, and that there's blood involved, like all of these things point towards the idea that it could have a sexual component. So if I want to write a story that is something about sexual assault and trauma, something about aggressors or something about someone getting revenge, all of those elements can equally be dropped into a vampire narrative. And sometimes as a result of dropping it there, you can be more direct and you can be more honest about what it is that you're saying because you're not saying it directly. So hopefully that helps you to figure out what direction you want to head with your story for your film. My hope is that after everything that we've talked about up until now, you have a bunch of notes that you've feverishly scribbled somewhere and you're ready to start shaping them into a script. And that's what we're going to start doing in the next segment. But first, one more important note. You remember back when we made that list evaluating all of your resources? Well, before you start writing your script, your next task is to verify the things on that list. What I mean by that is you may know someone who has a drone, but unless you've already asked them if you can use it to shoot part of the movie, that's a theoretical resource. Theoretical resources are not ideal, that you think you have them and so you write them into the script. And then when you actually talk to someone about the resource, if they say no to your request, you're now stuck. You either have to find it someplace else, which can cost you time and money, or you have to rewrite your script, which can be time consuming and heartbreaking. So before we dive into the long, difficult, exciting process of writing the script, you should verify those resources and make sure that they're real and available and you can actually use them. If they are objects, make sure that you can borrow them. If they're people, ask them if they're willing to help you and what kind of time and commitment they might be able to devote to the project. Then that list of resources will be a more accurate reflection of the things that you know you can count on. And then there will be nothing stopping you from writing that script. So let's do it.